This is the Does God Exist Quarterly Journal for the second quarter of 2022. For the visually impaired, and John Clayton is your reader. And our theme for this month is Evidence for God in Living Things. And on the cover, there's a picture of a male peacock in full regalia, with the feathers all sticking out every direction and different colored eye-like things. On it, our lead article is titled Evidence for God in Living Things. In the more than 50 years that I have been presenting lectureships throughout the United States, I have noticed a big difference between what people react to in rural areas and in urban environments. The difference isn't a matter of education or knowledge, but evidence and observation. If you have spent your life surrounded by concrete and educators who tried to tell you what to believe, your appreciation of the animal world is less acute than if you see it for yourself. I've even noticed a difference between student response in a university that is a land-grant agricultural and engineering school and a school that emphasizes philosophy and humanism. We can categorize the evidence for God's wisdom in creating living things into several different areas. Each category offers a portrayal of design and wisdom beyond the reach of those who have not seen it for themselves. Carefully studying those areas shows that chance explanations fail. Here are some examples. The role of migration. Common sense might suggest that in some places on Earth are simply unfit for living things. In Alaska, we find a geologically young area that is very sterile. There is no soil for plants to take root because volcanism and glaciation are still shaping the land. Humans find it a challenge to grow crops in that area. The migration of salmon solves this difficulty. Salmon are designed to return to the stream of their birth when they reach sexual maturity. They lay and fertilize their eggs, and then they die. Their decaying bodies provide the nutrients that allow plant growth. Birds and bears are the obvious living things that survive because of the salmon. But those fish provide food for dozens of other creatures, directly or indirectly. In that way, no area becomes devoid of life. The migration of birds maintains polar areas that would seem to be hostile to life. Some birds, such as the Arctic tern and the Hudsonian gudwick, travel 25,000 miles, providing life-supporting resources to places 12,000 miles apart. These birds are equipped for long flights by being able to fly while they are sleeping and adjusting their body functions to fit their migration. Their droppings nourish plants and their eggs feed land animals. Monarch butterflies migrate from areas all over North America to a wintering area in Mexico. Loons travel between Canadian areas and semi-tropical areas. Sea turtles migrate to lay their eggs in one particular location. Hummingbirds travel huge distances, fulfilling their role as crucial pollinators for widely separate areas. The list of living things that migrate over vast geographic areas is extensive, and researchers try to understand what they do and how they do it. The ability to make these migrations involves using specialized equipment that seems designed to fit the migration. Mechanisms that allow balance in the natural world. One thing that escapes many people is how important it is that plants and animals keep a balance in the natural world. This becomes more apparent when a predator is eliminated from an ecosystem. For example, in the Midwest in recent years, we have had a problem with deer populations. 100 years ago, wolves and mountain lions ate deer and kept their populations within a level that did not exceed their food supply. Because the predators have been eliminated, deer populations have grown until there isn't adequate food, so the deer are starving, and forests are being destroyed. Maintaining fish populations has been very difficult. When people fished all of the bass out of one of our local lakes, minnows multiplied out of control. That turned the lake into a biological desert because the minnows died due to a lack of food. We see a documentary that shows wolves pulling down a moose or lions killing a wildebeest and consider it brutal and cruel. But they often eliminate the weak and aging animals. The human lack of understanding of how to keep balance in the living things we have control over has resulted in some animals becoming extinct. The, quote, fit, unquote, don't always survive if we throw the ecology out of balance. The symbiotic nature of living things. Closely related to balance in the natural world is the design of symbiotic relationships. We can see this when two or three living things depend on each other to survive. A bee pollinates a flower, and the flower must have the bee to reproduce and expand its territory. The bee depends upon the flower's nectar for survival. If all the bees are killed, the plants will die. In recent years, fruit growers have had to contend with bee die-offs, and maintaining the balance has become exceedingly difficult. There are numerous cases where symbiotic relationships are so complex that scientists are still trying to understand them. However, most of them are quite simple, such as oak trees and squirrels. Oak trees produce acorns, which provide food for the squirrels. Squirrels bury the acorns, and their brains are structured so they don't dig up all of the acorns. The acorns that are left, buried, become new oak trees. Without the squirrels, the forest would cease to exist once the older trees die. Sometimes an animal alters its environment so that other life forms can exist. For example, beavers dam up a stream to make a pond. The pond not only allows fish to live, but plants that need moist conditions also depend on the beaver. The plants, in turn, provide food for the beaver. Removing beavers from an area means that certain plants will not survive. Likewise, insects frequently have a symbiotic relationship with plants. Several species actually raise plant material as the basis of their food. When you see a relationship like this, you have the old chicken or egg question about which came first, or were they created together? The design of evolution. Perhaps one of the great examples of God's role in living things is the design of plants and animals that allows change. If plants could not change, then all the plants would die every time the climate changed. Darwinists constantly point to cases where an environmental change threatened to eliminate a group of living things, and adaptations allowed the plant or animal to survive. Humans have used this capacity to produce better crops and livestock to feed their growing population. Corn and wheat have been improved to give greater yields. Adaptive breeds of cattle exist because humans have used selective breeding. The Scottish cattle, with their insulating hair, survive in a climate that a Charolais would not survive. New varieties of livestock and crops have been developed over the years to provide food to meet the world's needs. The more we understand the genome of various animals, the more we see that they are designed for a given environmental situation. It has taken hundreds of years for humans to understand how this works. People in rural areas where the principles are applied see the hand of God that allows a wide variety of plants and animals. Atheistic evolutionists take the obvious changes built into living things and try to eliminate God as the designer of those changes. However, when you spend every day working with the plants and animals that radiate the wisdom of God's design, it becomes very easy to understand, quote, that we can know there is a God through the things he has made. Romans 1 and verse 20. Attributing what we see to living things to blind mechanistic chance requires imagination. For those of us who see design in the world around us, chance is a statistically impossible picture to accept. Shoreburg migration. There's a picture at the top of the page of a Hudsonian godwit. It's a little bird with a very long beak. One of the great mysteries of the natural world is the way various shorebirds make their incredible migrations. One of the most studied shorebirds gets part of its name from Canada's Hudson Bay, where it was first identified. The second part of its name comes from its two-syllable cry of Gortwick, Gortwick. The Hudsonian godwit is a bird with remarkable migrations. They lay their eggs in Alaska and northern Canada in the spring. Then in June or July, they leave their hatchlings to fly 4,000 miles to the northern Amazon. After that, they make another 2,000-mile flight to Chiloé Island off the coast of Chile. Then the following spring, they fly from Chile to the northern areas where they lay their eggs and repeat the cycle. The mystery is how the young Hudson Godwits make their journey without adult instruction about where to go. Since these birds live 10 to 12 years, they will make the journey as many as 24 times. Hudsonian Godwits weigh less than an ounce when they hatch. But in a couple of hours, they are running around catching mosquitoes and flies. Then before starting their journey south, they bulk themselves up to 12 times their original weight. Another mystery about the birds is their anatomical preparation for the flights. The typical Hudsonian Godwit will have a blood sugar concentration that would be in the diabetic range for humans. This is before their migration. The birds' pectoral muscles double or triple in size, as do their hearts and lungs. To balance this increase, their gizzards, livers, and kidneys shrink. When they arrive at their destination, all their organs readjust to the normal size. As the birds fly their long journeys, one side of their brain will sleep, while the other side stays awake and alert. And later, the sides will switch. It is called unihemispheric slow-wave sleep, and it allows them to fly day and night. In addition, the respiratory systems are highly efficient, allowing flight at high altitudes with less oxygen. That is essential since they fly over the Andes Mountains. Also mysterious is the ability of the Hudsonian Godwits to navigate their journey. Researchers say that the birds know and understand weather systems, including wind and rain. They navigate with their vision using stars and landforms, and even smells seem to guide them. But that still does not explain it all. They also sense the Earth's magnetism. But scientists are not sure how. One hypothesis is that their vision is linked to the Earth's magnetic lines of force by quantum entanglement, a phenomenon Einstein calls, quote, spooky action at a distance, end of quote. The journey of the Hudsonian Godwits allows them to secure food at random locations, and their diet of mosquitoes, insects, and worms benefits their environments as much as the birds themselves. The design of the Hudsonian Godwits speaks of wisdom, planning, and highly sophisticated applications of physics. Understanding these birds should inspire wonder in a thinking person about what the source of such abilities. Truly, we can know there is a God through the things he has made, Romans 1 and verse 20. Color vision in animals. Color vision differences in various creatures result from eye design. Humans see colors because we have three kinds of cones in the retina that respond to different energies of light. Our eyes have color cones sensitive to red, green, and blue. If light stimulates all three types of cones, we see it as white. When light stimulates red and green cones, but not blue, we see yellow. Other combinations result in every color we can see. Some light energies do not trigger any of our cones, but they affect us. For example, our eyes can't perceive ultraviolet energy, but the UV rays can cause sunburn. Likewise, we can't see infrared energy, but we can feel heat. Animals have many color vision differences compared to humans. Why do deer not see the orange jackets that hunters frequently wear? A deer can't see very much color at all. That means a hunter standing still In the woods, wearing an orange camouflage outfit will be invisible to a deer, but highly visible to other hunters. Some animals that do not see color can see light energies we can't. For example, a rattlesnake can see infrared, which is a lower energy than the visible light we see. A warm-blooded animal like a rat or a mouse gives off infrared radiation. A rattlesnake can see the infrared light coming from the rat on a dark night when there is no light visible to humans. The National Science Foundation reported on a jumping spider found in Europe and in North Africa with no red color sensitivity. A red ball would appear gray or black to these spiders. However, the males of this furry spider have a red crown and legs. Even though potential mates cannot see the red, certain areas of the spider's body strongly absorb ultraviolet light. These areas appear as spider green to other jumping spiders. In addition to the color vision differences, some animals have specialized vision tools that help them survive. For example, a water turtle's eyes have polarized corneas. That polarization allows the turtle to see reflected light because it is polarized parallel to the reflecting surface. A turtle needing to locate water will simply scan the horizon to see polarized light reflected from the water's surface. Other animals, such as birds or fish, have polaroids in a vertical orientation, enabling them to see through clouds or water without having to deal with glare. Designing cells that can detect light is only part of the story. Many eyes that meet peculiar needs of various animals is much more difficult. Your vision is just one more support for David's statement, quote, "I will praise you, Lord, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." That's Psalms 139 and verse 14. The Problem of Beauty by Roland Ernst. One of the challenges that skeptics use to argue against the existence of God is often called the problem of pain. The argument goes something like this: why would an all-powerful and loving God allow pain and suffering? We have dealt with that problem before, including on our website, whypain.org. However, there is a contrasting argument for the existence of God that some have called the problem of beauty. The problem of beauty asks the question, how is it possible that evolution by natural selection could create such beauty in living things? In other words, how could natural selection acting on random mutations create beauty which seems to have no survival value? Darwinian evolution operates on the survival of the fittest. However, the survival of the fittest can't explain many cases of beauty which seem to make the animal less fit and thus less likely to survive. How can a seemingly simple process of natural selection explain all of the beauty in nature? Look around and you will see beautiful designs that naturalistic evolution attempts to explain without a designer. Why are male cardinals so beautifully red? Why do butterflies have such exquisite designs and colors? Some animals display beautiful colors that make them more vulnerable to predators. A male bird may sing for an hour, announcing himself not only to prospective mates, but also to predators. How can those beautiful features promote a survival of the fittest? Lyrebirds, flowers, starfish, butterflies, and seashells all display beautiful features that cannot be explained as survival benefits. In some cases, they may at least partially be explained by mathematical principles. But then where did the mathematical principles in our three-dimensional world originate except from the creator of all things? Why does the nightingale sing beautiful songs to the darkness? Why do some lizards display colorful crests? How can colorblind cuttlefish change their colors at will, not just to camouflage, but to send messages to other squid or predators, or just to dazzle any observer? Why do flowers display not only beautiful colors, but also soothing fragrance? The beauty of nature is visual, auditory, and even fragrant. Most of all, it is priceless. A humpback whale's intricate and beautiful song lasts for half an hour. Does it have anything to contribute to the survival of these animals? Well, in a way it does. When human technology reached a point where the humpback song could be heard and recorded in the 1960s, more people than the whale hunters got a chance to hear it. The exposure of that song to the general population of humans played a large part in the passage of laws preventing the slaughter of those animals. But it is evidence for human appreciation of beauty, not evolutionary natural selection. For those who suggest the male humpback used their songs to attract females, there is little to no evidence that the females are even paying attention. No proponent of Darwinian evolution would suggest that the humpback whales are even remotely related to nightingales. But those birds also sang long, complex, and beautiful songs. Rather than singing into the ocean, nightingales sang for hours into the night. As those small birds sit on a branch singing, but not moving, they make themselves easy prey for predators. Instead of singing from twilight into the night, why don't they just be quiet and stay safe until morning? When scientists tape recorded nightingales and slowed down the tape, lowering the pitch a couple of octaves, they discovered something very interesting. The result was that the nightingale song sounded much like the song of a humpback whale. On the other hand, if you take the humpback whale song and speed it up while raising the pitch, it compares to a nightingale. Why should they be so much alike? Evolutionists like to call this sort of thing convergent evolution. I have another suggestion. Perhaps they got their music from the same original composer. Why do humans appreciate beauty? It brings us joy, eases our stress, and touches us deeply. Does a dog stop to admire a sunset, listen to a beautiful music, or enjoy the beauty or fragrance of flowers? Do beautiful animals admire their own beauty? Do the birds sing because they love to hear music? Or are they just doing what their creator programmed them to do? Why did God design and program these animals in this way? Is it because he created us to enjoy beauty and give us the earthly example of the heavenly beauty he has planned for us? In other words, is beauty another evidence that God exists? I prefer to see the problem of beauty as a blessing of beauty. Scientists like to talk about emergent order, referring to how the beauty of life emerged without any design or intelligent guidance. Instead, they say it was accomplished by a set of simple rules laid out originally by Charles Darwin and refined into what is now known as Neo-Darwinism. In his 1859 book, The Origin of Species, Darwin presented his principle of natural selection, but he realized that it couldn't explain the selection method it used in all cases. Moreover, he was troubled by the excess beauty in nature and the unnecessary frills and flourish, which he could not explain by natural selection. A year after that book was published, his frustration caused him to write, quote, "The feather side of a feather in a peacock's tail, whenever I gaze at it, makes me sick." To cover those cases where natural selection can't explain the beauty in nature, he introduced sexual selection. In his 1871 book, The Descent of Man and Selection Related to Sex, sexual selection involves beauty often seen in male birds in general and in peacocks in particular. According to Darwin's sexual selection theory, the reason for the beauty of the peacock's tail is that the peahens prefer such gaudy but impractical decorations. The same applies to many other species, such as bowerbirds or birds of paradise, where the males display striking colors or impressive actions to attract a mate. German zoologist and eugenicist Ernst Haeckel was also an artist who popularized Darwin by his artwork, published in several books. His drawings depict the beauty he saw in even one-celled animals known as Rotifolia. He attributed the beauty to natural selection and mathematical principles. Darwin's hypothesis enamored Haeckel so much that he went out of his way to promote it in a book of drawings. However, his drawings sometimes show his bias for Darwinism. In The Natural History of Creation, he displayed one engraving comparing human embryos with embryos of pigs, sheep, and chickens, suggesting that the development of those embryos repeats the path of evolution. However, he manipulated his illustrations to prove his point. Other scientists later pointed out the flaws, and his dishonesty discredited his scientific credentials. Still, he promoted Darwinism, believing that evolution was heading toward a gradual achievement of design without a designer. Physicist and Nobel laureate Steven Weinberg is an atheist who rejects belief in God because of the problem of pain. He explains that in his book, Dreams of a Final Theory. However, he can't explain the problem of beauty. He made the understatement of the century when he wrote, quote, "I have to admit that sometimes nature seems more beautiful than strictly necessary," end of quote. Evolutionary biologist and atheist Richard Dawkins, writing in his book, Climbing Mount Improbable, told about when he was driving through the countryside with his younger daughter. The girl was excited about seeing pretty wildflowers. Dawkins asked his daughter what she thought was the purpose of the wildflowers, and she replied, quote, "To make the world pretty and to help the bees make honey for us," end of quote. Dawkins said he was sorry that he had, quote, to tell her that wasn't true. According to Dawkins, biology is a study of things that appear to be designed for a purpose. But his atheism forces him to argue that there is no purpose. There are many examples of the problem of beauty. Various species sing songs and perform dances that go beyond what survival would require. Gibbons sing duets, and birds of paradise display their beauty with song and dance. Bowerbirds go to excess extremes to create works of art. Birds known as huadas have extravagant and impractical tails that are longer than their bodies. Like the peacock's tail, these attributes seem inefficient and not a method to adapt to an environment. Parrots come in a variety of dazzling colors that don't seem to be for the purpose of adapting to the environment. Are these colors for survival of the fittest, or what David Rothenberg, a philosopher at New Jersey Institute of Technology, calls survival of the beautiful? Humans are obsessed with beauty. We use cosmetics and clothing, trying to make ourselves more beautiful. We seek to create beauty in music and art, and we continually long for something even more beautiful. What is the purpose of beauty? It is not to provide protection or solve problems. The purpose is to bring joy, peace, and meaning to life. However, as we seek beauty, we long for something even more beautiful. We strive to create it, but we also desire to find it in nature. The prophet Isaiah, in a vision, saw God's throne room, where one seraph cried out, quote, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." Isaiah 6:3. God's glory is displayed in the beauty we see on the planet. The curse of sin has marred that beauty, but it still peeks through. It reminds us of the creator of, quote, "every good and perfect gift," James 1:17. Theologian N.T. Wright asked the question that we all face at some time, quote, "If the earth is full of God's glory, why is it also so full of pain and anguish and screaming and despair?" That is the problem of pain. But I think we see a glimpse of the answer to this so-called problem of beauty. I suggest that humans appreciate and desire beauty because God created us in his image. God creates beauty in the world around us to give us a sample of what is possible. When we see beauty, we long for more because there is always seem to be imperfections in the beauty we see here. Peacocks die. Colorful fall leaves turn brown and fall to the ground. The beauty of a sunset is fleeting. We long for more. We want to know what more God has in store for us. The Apostle John saw a vision of what God has waiting for those who accept his gift of eternal life. In Revelation chapters 21 and 22, he struggled to describe it in terms of the familiar, such as gold, pearls, and jewels. But he knew those words were inadequate. In the beauty around us, we see a glimpse of the glory of God's beauty. We long for the revelation of the pure beauty of God's kingdom. As we struggle to answer the problem of pain, perhaps the answer is right before our eyes. The problem of beauty is only a hint, a clue, a sample of the ultimate beauty. I can't wait to see the real thing. Scientists and God. Editors note, atheists attempt to suggest that scientists are intelligent people who have rejected faith and do not believe in God. The fact is that some of the most productive scientists who have ever lived were believers in God. We share some of their thoughts with you in this column on a regular basis. Then our scientist for this quarter is George Francis Rayner Ellis, who is a professor of complex systems in the Department of Mathematics at the University of Cape Town in South Africa. He's the author of Large-Scale Structure in Space-Time with the University of Cambridge physicist Stephen Hawking. He is the president of the International Society on General Relativity and Gravitation. He was awarded the Order of the Star of South Africa by Nelson Mandela in 1999. He was the past president of the International Society for Science and Religion and won the Templeton Prize in 2004. And was elected a fellow of the British Royal Society in 2007. One of the world's leading theorists in cosmology. And Dr. Ellis had this to say. Amazing fine-tuning occurs in the laws that make complexity possible. Realization of the complexity of what is accomplished makes it very difficult not to use the word miraculous. Without taking a stand as to the ontological status of the word. God is the creator and sustainer of the universe and of humankind, transcending the universe, but immanent in it. God's nature embodies justice and holiness, but it is also a personal and loving God who cares for each creature. So the name Father is indeed appropriate. God's nature is revealed most perfectly in the life and teachings of Jesus of Nazareth, as recorded in the New Testament of the Bible, who was sent by God to reveal the divine nature summarized in God, his love. Cynthia's Corner by Cynthia Clayton. Remember, our theme is evidence for God in living things. And Cynthia's column begins with this quote, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Psalms 139, verses 13 and 14. End of quote. "I have been blessed to give birth to two healthy babies, to experience life growing inside you, and being able to give birth to a human being is a miracle. To watch them grow in size and knowledge and abilities the first few years is astounding. In fact, children's brains develop connections faster in the first 5 years than any other time in their lives. This is God's design to ensure the development of children. Romans 1, 19 through 20 tells us that we can know there is a God through the things he has made. Quote, "God's invisible qualities, his divine nature and eternal power, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made." End of quote. We see evidence for God's design in every living creature. Everything God created has purpose and design. The Does God Exist Ministry has a whole series of Danny Design's books about this, and they just scratch the surface. I'm not a scientist, and I don't have the vast knowledge on this subject that others have, but I can look at the world I live in and marvel at the endless variety, complexity, and beauty of the living creatures in the air, on the land, and in the sea. We live in a world of magnificent colors, shapes, and designs of all kinds and sizes. The natural world we live in is an awesome display of God's creative process and his love of beauty and design. As a layperson not trained in science, I can simply appreciate the wonder and beauty of the world. Intelligent design requires an intelligent designer. Chaos or happy coincidences did not create our world and the cosmos we observe. I am now blessed to look at a grandchild and once again to be amazed at the miracle of human life and the blessing of family. The words of wisdom recorded in Proverbs 8, 22 through 51, quote, "The Lord possessed me," wisdom speaking, "at the beginning of his work. And later, I was filled with delight day after day, rejoicing always in his presence, rejoicing in his whole world, and delighting in mankind." Dandy Designs. Bowerbirds. Bowerbirds are a family of over 20 species of birds found in Australia and New Guinea. The name comes from the fact that the males prepare bowers to attract females. The bowers are not for dwelling, just for display. To these birds, the bowers are attractive works of art. Bower birds are perhaps the only creatures, other than humans, that create things that are beautiful beyond their function. Satin bower birds are the most familiar to humans because they are not afraid to build their bowers next to human habitations. The male starts by removing leaves from bushes and branches that would shade his building site, and he clears the 1 meter area of debris before bringing in his own decorative debris consisting of twigs and sticks. He tramples those items into the ground to build a platform for his bower. Then he gathers hundreds of twigs about a foot long and places them vertically in two rows with a space in the middle where he will stand. The largest opening usually faces the direction of the sunlight, which in Australia is north. Next, the bird may use grasses to line the display floor. Then he may paint the walls with crushed berries using a piece of bark for a paintbrush. He then decorates the sunny northern side of the bower with any blue objects he can find. It may be flowers, parrot feathers, or even blue plastic spoons. If a female comes by, the male will try to impress her by doing a song and dance routine inside his bower. If she isn't impressed, she will just fly away. The spotted bowerbird will use a wide range of decorations in his bower, including berries, nuts, leaves, pods, eggshells, insects, mushrooms, green slime, reptile skin, snail shells, spider egg cases, stones, bones, and various colors of glass and plastic. They seem to like small snail shells and use them in their dance routines, during which they toss them high into the air. Unfortunately, their dance is so boisterous that they sometimes frighten the females. Golden bowerbirds build the largest bowers with two towers that can be 10 feet tall around two small trees, linked together with a fallen branch. They decorate the connecting bridge with hanging lichens and flowers. Vulcan-caught bowerbirds build a bower that resembles a teepee around a pole surrounded by flowers, seeds, and feathers. McGregor's bowerbird creates an elaborate structure resembling a Christmas tree, decorated with spider silk and hanging ornaments made of mushrooms, butterfly wings, moss, and lichens. He begins by plucking the leaves off a sapling with it about 4 feet tall. He then clears all the debris, the detritus, from the circuit area around the tree and covers the clearing with a layer of moss. Bowerbird males spend weeks or months building their bowers in one location, where they may be vulnerable to predators because of attracting attention to themselves. They are not following the principle of survival of the fittest. Instead, we see bowerbirds as dandy designers, and another example of God's dandy designs in his living creatures. News and notes. Water and climate. One of the factors that put planet Earth in the so-called Goldilocks zone in our solar system is that it is the correct distance from the sun for liquid water to exist. We know that life is not possible without liquid water, but we can easily overlook how water affects Earth's climate. Norway's Lofoten Islands are 105 miles north of the Arctic Circle, but they enjoy relatively mild temperatures. For example, the warmest temperature ever recorded at Skrovetana Lighthouse on one of the islands was 86.7 degrees, and the coldest was 4.8 degrees Fahrenheit. On the other hand, the city of Yakutsk, Siberia, holds the title of being the coldest city in the world. Some reports say the temperature has dropped as low as minus 76 degrees Fahrenheit. The surprising thing is that Yakutsk is 280 miles south of the Arctic Circle. That's 385 miles south of Skoka in the Lofoten Islands. Water largely explains the difference. The North Atlantic Current and the Norwegian Current bring warmer water to the Lofoten Islands. By contrast, Yakutsk is sand landlocked, located in a valley surrounded by mountains. As a result, the cold air settles into the low area and keeps Yakutsk in the freezer. The highest and lowest temperatures on Earth tend to be in the interior of the continents because the land masses heat and cool much more quickly than large bodies of water. The precision design of water gives it the qualities that life requires, and it is abundant on this planet to supply our needs. We think water is a strong evidence of God's wisdom, design, and care for His creation. How fish navigate. A biologist in Israel conducted an ingenious experiment to learn how fish navigate. She constructed a fish-operated vehicle for goldfish to drive. The vehicle consisted of a square fish tank fastened to a chassis with four multidirectional wheels. A downward-facing camera was connected to the computer algorithm, which prompted the wheels to move the vehicle in the direction the fish was swimming. The six goldfish in the experiment navigated around obstacles and avoided dead ends. The researchers suggest that understanding how fish navigate in unfamiliar territories, such as in the terrestrial world, may help humans navigate in unfamiliar environments such as the zero gravity of space. The natural world is filled with examples of God's design, and how fish navigate is one of many systems we are just beginning to understand and may use as models to shape the future. Campus censorship. When we began giving lectures on university campuses in 1968, we could go to virtually any campus, rent an auditorium or classroom, and give a presentation of evidence for the existence of God. We could prepare and distribute posters on campus and advertise it in the student newspaper. Volunteers could pass out brochures and invite students and faculty to attend. Our sessions always included a question-answer session. We did this on hundreds of university campuses, including major state and private schools, and they brought in sizable audiences. In the past 10 years, we have seen a militant attempt by these schools and others to stop presentations like ours. An organization called the, quote, Foundation for Individual Rights in Education evaluated 481 colleges and universities on a score with 100 being totally free speech. The colleges were studied were all under 73 on that scale. That says a lot about censorship on the American college campuses. Jesus Christ challenged his listeners with questions. You can see that in the examples in Matthew 17:25, Matthew 18:12, Matthew 21:28, Matthew 22:42. Censorship on the American college campuses does not allow the free exchange of ideas, especially when someone tries to present a Christian view. Lizard lung design. Studying the design of lizard lungs may lead to innovations in developing artificial lungs for humans. Princeton University researchers studied the development of lungs in brown anoile lizards and found that their lungs develop in a few days. In the brown anoile lizard, fluid fills the area that will become a lung and pushes against smooth muscle tissue until gaps develop in the muscle. Then a membrane protrudes through the gaps so that a large surface area forms, and within 2 days, the surface area is ready to exchange gas. Researchers were able to build a working replica mimicking the lizard's natural process of lung development. Princeton researchers say that the process is simple, a mechanical process that could be used as a model for advanced biotechnology design. The National Science Foundation says this discovery could lead to innovations in artificial lung design and development. We can improve the future of human health by studying living things, including God's design of lizard lungs. Life on Mars. The media has sensationalized the finding of organic molecules for Mars. For many people, hearing that something is organic means it is related to life. For example, in 1996, scientists reported on their study of a meteorite identified as ALH84001, found 12 years before it in Antarctica. Characteristics of the meteorite indicated it had come from Mars, and analysis showed that it contained organic compounds. Media reports immediately claimed that this was evidence of life on Mars at some time in the past. Research on ALH84001 reported in January of 2022, shows that organic molecules probably came from the interaction of water and minerals that are not related to living organisms. Earlier researchers had made similar findings on the Martian meteorite that landed in Morocco in 2011. Neither of these meteorites gave evidence of life on Mars. Organic molecules can be formed by abiotic, in other words, non-life, chemical reactions when water is present. Along with the minerals that make up organic compounds, many chemists are active believers in God because they see the wisdom and creative design built into chemistry, making life possible. There is strong evidence that the laws of chemistry were fine-tuned for life, especially human life. Cryogenic eternal life. If you believe this life is all there is to your existence, the logical thing is to try and make this life eternal. One way to do that could be to have your body frozen when you die until science can find a way to make you live forever. Organizations such as the Cryonics Institute in Michigan are offering cryonic eternal life. When you are declared dead, technicians will cool your body with ice water and keep the tissues oxygenated using CPR and an oxygen mask. Then they fly the iced body to a laboratory and connect it to a heart-lung bypass machine that circulates the blood. Next, they take the pump in the solution to act as an antifreeze to prevent cell tissues from being destroyed by the ice crystals. Finally, they cool the body to minus 320 degrees Fahrenheit in a tank of liquid nitrogen. The idea is that when medical science advances and finds a cure for whatever caused the person's death, they can revive the body, reverse the aging process, and give the person another shot at life. However, it is evident that the technology to make that possible is a very long way off and probably will never happen. How much greater would it be to accept a better eternal existence that God offers for free through Jesus Christ? Aging churches. A child is born every 8 seconds, and someone dies every 11 seconds in the United States. The average age of all people in this country is 38, but no mainline church denominations have an average that low. Data on major religious groups shows that those with an emphasis on the Bible concept of the family have a lower age than denominations that do not. For example, the United Methodist Church has an average age of 58. The Episcopal